This is the Wordy Rapping Hood on RPP FM with Tracy Hutchison.
So I'm on board the beautiful Polpero. It's a beautiful day in Port Phillip Bay. It's always a beautiful day in Port Phillip Bay. And I'm with the matriarch of the Polpero family, Jude Muir, the family business. And we're out here on Port Phillip Bay, your second home, Jude. What brought you to the Mornington Peninsula and I guess specifically this place?
Everything's so organic. I'm not sure how it happened. We actually came down to buy a crayfish for lunch and bought a house. So I think that's how life is, really. It just generally wobbles along. And for some reason, we seem to be just where we need to be. So I think it's rather lovely. But the attraction was always here. We holidayed here. I grew up in Black Rock, very similar to the Sorrento that we came to, with dirt roads, tea tree, beautiful beaches with no one on it. And you know that that disappears very quickly. So we came down here probably nearly 40 years ago permanently. But we did buy land here 50 years ago with a bit of foresight. And I'd hate to tell anybody in today's market, but we did buy land right in Sorrento for $750 a block and paid it off.
Smart move. Just watching the Queenscliff Ferry coming in as we're sort of sitting just at Sorrento Pier here, about to go out for one of the last dolphin swims of the season. Just tell us a little bit about the evolution of Polpero, because this beautiful Huon timber boat started her life as a fishing boat and then a dive boat. How did you come to the Polpero?
Well, it actually started life as a dive boat. It was built specifically for dive charter in Bass Strait. We had another boat called Poringa, which was, a more simple model. It didn't sleep people aboard, but we used to cruise around Bass Strait, take people into Refuge, Deal Island, all those places, and sleep them overnight, and then go out on the boat by day as a dive charter. When Polpero came on the market about 18 months after she was built, Tony snapped her up. He loved her dearly. That's my husband, Tony. And we've always had charter boats, and so Polpero was just another one in the chain. And she pretty well became, when I say a chain, not a conglomerate, you know, huge business, but just one after the other successively. Tony's a ship's master, deep sea diver. What would suit a man better than having a boat to go out in and an excuse to do it as a livelihood? And with that, he also ran the ferries at Sorrento. He ran the passenger ferries that went Sorrento, Portsea and Queenscliff. And same on the way back, dropping in at Portsea, greatly loved, and just an icon of the area, and quickly eaten up when the car ferry came in. People changed allegiance and then regretted that. They so missed the little passenger ferries, going along the boat, being mobbed by dolphins, talking to the dog, talking to the captain, kids having a go at driving it, all those sorts of things. And so we decided, with that job here for Tony, kids who would enjoy primary school at Sorrento at that stage, that after years and years of travelling, we should settle down, and this has been it.
When you were out in Bass Strait running the dive boat, and you realised that for some reason the bottlenose dolphin colony at Port Phillip Bay loved this boat, and it changed. It was sort of the moment, the fork in the road moment in lots of ways. Just describe what happened with the dolphins and this boat.
Well, again, it was a confluence of events. So I do a lot of open water swimming, as you do, and the dolphins used to come and play around. Some dolphin researchers were out on the bay watching me with the dolphins, I suppose, swimming along, and said, we'd like to do some research, and we know you've got a boat. At that time, our eldest son was due to start university. The others only went to school 3 days a week and spent 4 days at sea, which suited them admirably and did them no harm. But we thought it was about time we got serious about this tertiary education bit. And so it was ideal then to become a research vessel. It started out as research. Dolphin researchers said, well, we're going to raise money by running dolphin swims. And we screamed, no, please don't. That can't work well. Two of our crew went around the world looking at the dolphin and whale encounters, came back with a lot of connections, international, people that were involved in this, either as academics studying it or people involved in it, and we knew that it would do more harm than good. We tried to close it down. Governments don't close down businesses, and thus an industry was born, because by then another person had got into the industry and it just meant that they would have to close down two businesses. Since then, we've introduced amendments to the Wildlife Act, and in doing that, we have what they call the Roald Gold version of a licensing system. It's now internationally renowned for the perfection within it, and it has offered really ideal protection for these dolphins, because this is year 30 for us. We started in 1986, and we do know that, it's a limited industry. It's not one that can be exploited to the point where the dolphins' energy budget isn't considered, and so there's a lot of reasons for having it very limited in favour of their conservation. It's also allowed us to have a soapbox, really.
Judy Muir is with us on RPP FM. The Wordy Wrapping Hood is the show, and we're doing a very special Wordy Wrapping Hood on board the Polpero on a beautiful afternoon on the magnificent Port Phillip Bay just off Sorrento as we get ready to head out for one of the last dolphin swims of the season. Jude, you were talking about starting off the dolphin swim business in 1986, so this is your 30th year, congratulations. What was it like in 86, you know, starting a business? What sort of place was Sorrento and the bay like then?
Oh, Sorrento was a quiet little village, a beautiful little tucked away area that came to life over summer but was basically dead the rest of the year. So it meant that we all had our other jobs, I suppose. I was working with kids with disabilities in mainstream schooling because integration had just been introduced. And so it was a half and half thing, and then eventually it became something that was picked up overseas, and we were finding ourselves hosting that many international visitors for the season. But it just grew gradually and gently, and we never foresaw that we would be running it full time. Even with the break over winter, the maintenance and the marketing and all the things we attend to and the documentation all have to be done. So it's become really a full-time job.
Talk us through some of those, I guess, first years going out on the bay, getting to know the bottlenose dolphin colony of the bay, and what you saw then, and I guess how you've seen both the colony and the bay change over those three decades.
I think it's easy to look back with rose-coloured glasses, and I've got to be careful not to do that, but it was pretty special. We were basically out here on our own. The people we took out were swimmers, people who were attracted to the water. Tourism now is everybody come, there are no holds barred, and so quite often you get people who are not at all familiar with wildlife, nature, or outdoor activities, especially those that are wet, wild and wonderful. So I suppose in those days it was a different lot of people that would come with us. There were also people who felt drawn to dolphins spiritually, and so we had to have a look at that as an aspect, not subscribe to it particularly, but realise that these animals held a fascination way beyond that of wildlife, that people felt attached to them in some way. And all of this time we did a very a good basic lot of research. So in fact we've written four doctoral theses, or had them written from the boat, and one master's thesis. All of those over those formative years contributed to setting in place what became the legislation in the Wildlife Act. Before that, what we had to do was just get the government to agree to come along with this, so that we could get any other operators to agree to a code of conduct. It was better when it was legislated, but it took so many goes getting it through Parliament, where one party would argue with another at the same time assuring us that we had bipartisan support. So we saw the political machine at work. It's not always as transparent as it should be, but eventually we got there, and we invited every politician aboard that we could, anyone who could influence the outcome, offered to drown a few. Got told once that someone wouldn't be much good alive, and I said, well, you're not much good, not much good dead, and I said, well, you're not much good alive at this point, so what'll we do? And people worked with us. There was an amazing generosity of spirit. There was an understanding that this was unique. Dolphins on the doorstep of an industrialised city with then 3 million people, which we thought was huge, and in a busy bay that's the busiest container port in the Southern Hemisphere, and this beautiful resident pod of dolphins living on our doorstep. What could be nicer?
Judy Muir is our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood. Our double PFM is where your ears are, and we're kind of taking a dive into the beautiful clear water that we get here in our part of the bay here on the southern part of the Mornington Peninsula, just off Sorrento as we're about to head out for the day. Jude, just describe what your feeling is when you have one of those rare and beautiful encounters with creatures that we know, and I know from having been on the boat many times with you, that will only come in of their own accord and their own volition. Mm-hmm. What that experience is for you when you feel that incredible, I guess, power of a creature that has only come up to you because it wants to.
It's wonderful. It's indescribable. And some days we get back on board and say, well, what can you say? I don't know what describes it best. Is it a form of ecstasy? Is it a form of just absolute understanding that two species have met voluntarily, enjoyed each other's company, enjoyed a passing moment or a longer moment, no harm done, each interested in the other, and that look in the eyes is extraordinary. So when we came out, we had concerns about how many are there in the bay. Nobody knew. Everybody guessed at these things. And finally, studies were done, and we found we've got very few. They found 79 dolphins in the bay. That's not a viable population if it was to succumb to the modern pressures of overpopulation, overabuse, abuse, and all those sorts of things. So it was important that we got to know them. We've got a very keen photographer on board, and that's Troy, who's the skipper, and my eldest son. It's run by the family, and the second generation now have it, and that's Troy and Ben. And it's run by a long-term crew that have an exquisite and intricate knowledge of all of these dolphins. They take photographs, they document everything, every encounter, the time, the amount of time the dolphins stayed by the boat, their behaviours, how many were in the pod, where are the young, how many young are born, and who seems to be the mother of. It's mostly a matriarchal pod, and so we know that if we lose two breeding females in any one year, scientists tell us that there will be no dolphins in the bay within 25 years. We do know that all of the dolphins now have evidence of boat strike, so they're all covered in propeller marks. And that's pretty hard to see, really. There's also dolphins with dolphin pox, which may be a sign of stress. And so we've got to be careful that what we do contributes to their well-being, not denies them their well-being by us being one of the cumulative forces. In looking back, I think we've done more good than harm. And I say that quite dispassionately, because that is the reason we exist, is really as conservationists. And I must say that this has been a platform for all sorts of things that have sprung out of that. Advice on the channel deepening process, looking at the development or not of Point Nepean or its re-inclusion into the national park system. So in a sense, it's allowed us to understand that I suppose that strip of water, that interface between the land and the bay, and how that impacts. We haven't separated the two. We've had a look at the behaviours of people. We've studied hard what is the best way to do these things, and we abide by it. And I think that then in itself becomes a study over time. And 30 years now is a very long time to have a look at a study and see how it's sustained a population and an industry. It's now an industry.
Judy Muir is with us. We're on board the Polpero, the family business, the dolphin swim business that operates out of Sorrento Pier and does daily swims, weather permitting, for a big chunk of the summer, on one of the last swims for this summer season. Jude, I wondered if you'd take us back into the pre-Polpero days, because your life in many ways could be described as, you know, my life at sea. You talked about growing up in Black Rock. There was obviously a very early connection to the bay through Half Moon Bay and knowing that well. What sparked your great interest in, and love for the sea in those very early childhood years at Black Rock?
I think it was an understanding that even though we lived a simple life of a working class family, that we were the luckiest people on earth. We lived in the most beautiful part of the world. My parents always called Half Moon Bay the heart of the world and said if you live close enough, as we did, and you don't visit it every day, then you don't really appreciate it. So they made us well aware that it was a place that should be almost revered. In those days, girls couldn't join yacht clubs. My brother was a member and sailed. I joined the lifesaving club, came up as a lifesaver, absolutely loved that. I was quite shy and reticent, but I loved the idea of taking responsibility and learning skills and swimming as a group. That was fun. It just goes from there, I suppose. But more than that, just down at Half Moon Bay one day during the sailing season, I met a man, and it happened to be the man who turned out to be the love of my life, and I was quite sure about that quite early on, and that was Tony. And he's a ship's master, a deep sea diver, and a great adventurer. And so we've been married for 50 years and together about 53, and it's been a great adventure. And I think Tony's real dream was always to sail around the world. We didn't go around the world in a yacht. We neither had the funds to do that or the means in any way. But we did get a little tiny yacht, a little keelboat. We ventured up the coast of Australia in a yacht that was only 5 metres long, or 17 foot 6, with only two sails, a jib and a mainsail. And we lived amongst the islands for 15 months. And it was magic and terrifying quite often. Wanted to go home a lot to my mum, really badly some days. It was horrible, but the whole thing was wonderful. And looking back on that experiencing, living on remote islands, teaching school to kids who'd never seen cars, becoming a cook on an island, there was so much to do and see that opened my eyes. Tony's job then, he decided that we needed to make a living. And so we came back to Victoria, where he quickly went back to being a deep sea diver, a commercial diver. And of course there was plenty of work. It was the oil industry had opened up in Victoria, and he was the only Australian at the time as a deep sea diver. He was a pioneer in that. So I've really had to go along with it as much as anything else. And I think that was implicit in the arrangement that we had, that this would be our life, and like it or lump it, it was going to be our life. Well, I love it. I think it's great. But it's not that I'm a great adventurer. It's just that I've been pulled along by someone who's been very competent and reassuring. And he's a man I would have gone anywhere in the world with. And indeed, we've done some sailing here and in Southeast Asia, and always had a boat, a little boat, Kuta boats before they became fashionable, all sorts of boats, but really lovely. So, it's been a good adventure.
We'll just pause for a moment to wave to someone who's scooting by in a little dinghy. Who's that out there, Jude? It's obviously someone you know.
That's my husband, Tony. He's out in that dinghy every day. He's very frail. He's not at all well, and he loves to get out in that dinghy. There's no holding him every single day. So there's a big smile on his dial. I might go over and have a wave, Trace.
All right, off you go. There he is.
Jude, you've talked obviously a lot about Tony and your lives as setting up this business for the family. It's now moved on to Troy and Ben, Captain Troy and Ben, who very much run the workings with Jess every day. Building this business and having a business, it's meant you've been able to spend your working life and your home life with your family. A sea life. Just describe what that's been like for you. For a lot of people, that people would think, oh, you know, sometimes it's nice to get away from the family. But you've created this world where obviously people love the ocean. Your family loves the ocean. It's such a big part of your lives. Day in, day out on the boat, though, that's sort of hard work. How's the family business evolved from your point of view as the matriarch of the family?
I think it's been a successful evolution, but rather accidental. I think it was trial and error, and it was really Troy and I that set it up, so eldest son and I, and then we asked Tony to stop skippering ferries and come and work with us because we needed an extra hand, and he did that willingly. and then Ben. And so it has been a family business. I don't know why we get on as well as we do. We're very different, all of us, each of us. And I think that works in our favour. I'm not sure. There doesn't seem to be any grandstanding or deep breathing or frustration that shows, and I suppose that tolerance is pretty good. They all live near each other. I've got grandchildren around. All my grandchildren live within walking distance, and to me that's pretty good. And if that's a measure of being able to run a business and a household, that's good. But they all learned how, all boys that I've got, they all learned how to clean, they all know how to run a boat, they all know how to be good dads and great cooks. So there was no role models in that sense that there were defined roles. It was just whatever needs doing gets done by the first person through the door and everybody mucks in.
Angus is the other son that doesn't come out on the boat. He's the filmmaker son. How does that dynamic work when you've got two sons who are very much involved in the family business and another son who isn't involved in the family business? How does that work?
Very well. Angus is very close to his brothers, and in fact he took the role of running a boat for a very wealthy man and taking this, what they call a yacht, but I call a very, very big power boat, wherever he wanted it pointed in the world. And Angus ran that in boy's own adventure, really, and got paid to do it. I think Angus's problem has always been explained that this is his boat that he grew up in, this is his cot. He doesn't really like visitors on it. And that's pretty hard because you've got to justify its keep. And he understands that. But he'll be down to help us when the boat goes on the slips next week for its annual refit. Angus will be down to fit in, and he fits in as, we call him No Fuss Gus, he fits in so easily. But he has a magnificent life of travel. He's recently married, happy as a sandboy, and really his filming is just his life. That's his thing. He understands technology. We don't. This collective here does not, and that's why he's very helpful to us. So we're nurturing that. No, they fit in well. It's extraordinary. Yeah.
You were honoured in the 2014 Australia Day Honours with an Order of Australia Medal, a very, very high honour for service to tourism and community. Tourism as the operator of the Polperro Dolphin Swims has been inducted into the Victorian Tourism Hall of Fame. It's very much revered for the very sustainable approach that you applied to the business. The personal honour, how did that sit with you?
Oh, it was uncomfortable to be told that you're going to get an Order of Australia for several reasons. One is that it's never an honour that you earn on your own, if you see it as an honour, and that's how it's given, because that only comes because everybody supports you. And as I said, if everybody hadn't taken a share of all of the roles, there wouldn't be one person who could become, I suppose, more iconic. Now, that might come with age. It might come with my desperation to learn everything about anything that I'm doing. I want to be good at running a boat. I want to have a ticket to run a boat. I want to be the dive master. And so qualifications kept coming and coming and coming. It was the same with tourism. I didn't know about tourism, so I helped form the Sorrento Tourism in its infant stages, and then it became beachside, and then we formed Mornington Peninsula Regional Tourism, and then to my great surprise I was invited to be on the board of Tourism Victoria. All those things provided insight, but it was a big learning curve, and at the same time I felt it necessary, more and more necessary, particularly as we'd lived in Asia for many years, very necessary to maintain a profile that would somehow allow me to connect with people that could be of advantage. So that was with politicians. They're the people that used to be really easy to access, now not so much. But you could go and have a good talk to a premier and say, I have concerns about the Bay, and they are based on this study, that study, and my experience. Can you help? And they were very forthcoming. And I think all of that sort of evolution, as I say, it was very organic. I didn't know that I would be on those boards. I didn't know that that would evolve in any way. So when it did happen, I suppose opportunities are there and you make the most of them. But sometimes I'd sit back and say, how did this happen to me? Now, the process of the Order of Australia is very secretive. You do not know anything, nothing. And you don't know who they've contacted. You never know who nominated you. And it's only when you get a letter to say you will be told on Australia Day that you have been awarded the Order of Australia Medal. And I just was absolutely stunned. And in some way, I was actually thrilled because it did include the environment in there. And I always thought that would never, ever get up as something to be honoured. It was the poor cousin. So the fact that it was tourism, the environment and community, I was very happy about that. And so I went in for the ceremony, took my eldest granddaughter with me and got the medal. And I don't think anyone else in the family's ever seen it. But that's quite a nice honour.
Judy Muir is with us. We're on board the Polperro and we're now sort of getting up to a bit of a fair clip on board and heading out in search of the elusive dolphins. It's probably worth just describing even what this process actually is like, because there isn't one spot that you go to. It's like, oh, we know they're going to be there. It's really potluck in lots of ways. You can come out and not see a single dolphin, or you can come out and just, you know, be just overwhelmed with dolphins. What's this process like? What's going on right now?
Well, you start with the premise that there's no such thing as a bad day. If you can be out here, see what you and I are seeing now, and understand that there's every likelihood that we will see a pod of dolphins and people will be able to get in the water and let the dolphins swim around us, them, of their own volition, without being coerced. We don't sit in their way, we don't cut them off, we don't feed them, we don't lure them, we don't chase them. This boat does 10 knots downhill with a stiff tide and a sea breeze. It's not going to run away anywhere for a dolphin that can do 40 k's. But the thing is, they adore the hull of this boat and they come in. And they offer us many, many brilliant opportunities that just, it's so exciting. I think one of the hallmarks of this is that the crew have not ever lost that excitement. Not ever. They are overjoyed. We've got far too many crew on today. I don't know whether you counted. It's the end of the season, so they've all turned up.
You know, including me.
And we've got another one down from James Cook University where she's studying. And so she just had a few days off. Where is she? On the boat. And I think that's the delight of it all. And look, it's going to be a great day no matter what happens.
We're just pulling up to the beautiful seal colony, Jude, and first divers are in. And we're just in the lee of both the wind and the beautiful perfume that normally greets us when we arrive at the seals. Just what have we got here?
Well, we've got a resting colony of, not a breeding colony, but a resting group of seals, and there's plenty of them. There'd have to be 30 or 40 there. And there's a lot of I'm wet, you're dry, and the arguments, but they seem not to resolve from the arguments, but it goes no further than a verbal thing. They're not biting each other. There's some in the water, and there's so, oops, that one's just been pushed off. And they're so nice that even the seagulls just sit on their backs with apparently some sort of immunity to any movement or level of discomfort to the animals. But they're very beautiful. The problem out here is entanglement, and there wouldn't be really a day that we don't see one without plastic bag entanglement or fishing line entanglement, and that's just so avoidable. And it's, you know, our bays are becoming full of plastic. These animals are inquisitive. Plastic doesn't grow, it gets around their neck or around their flippers, and eventually it cuts in. As they grow, it stays the same size, it doesn't grow, and it embeds itself into their flesh. But they're all coming in, they're as curious as puppies, they'll tumble around and give these people a great time. So if we have a look down there, the people are on a line, so they're not swimming off after them. They might group up with each dive master soon and go for a little swim. We've got plenty of staff on today looking after them in the water, and we take out very small groups, so nothing's too imposing, nothing's sort of getting in the way of the animals being free. When they're not corralled in, they're not in any way trapped by our activities. If they want to come in, they do, and you can see them coming in at the back of the line, and they're coming right under there, and it's really lovely, so that's fantastic. We've got one over here pretending to be a dolphin. It's leaping beautifully, a bit of a splash at the end instead of a neat pin drop, but there you go. It's doing well, and they're travelling right alongside the people now. So we keep well away from the structure for two reasons. One is we don't want to impose, and it's the law. And secondly is that if they dropped in on you, they'd squash you. They're big animals.
Well, let's leave these people to jump in. We have got full lines, so...
It's right under you now. Look down. They're coming under your feet.
How many have we got there, Jude? How many seals do we estimate that we've got on this structure? It's quite well known, this structure, and these are the, I guess you call them the resting, the males. So they're the males that have done with the mating around the corner at Seal Rocks, and then they're the pups that are not ready to go around the corner. They're sort of still waiting for their first date.
That's pretty well it. It sums it up beautifully. I liken it to a pub. The smell's about the same. And I think the conversation's the same. You know, do you get a bit? No. Oh, well, we'll just hang around here for a bit longer. And I think all these fisticuffs are really more about them trying to tell each other, you know, like I can face up to you and I can shirt front you and all those expressions. And they practice on each other. So it's a game of British Bulldog at the moment. It's not that serious, but it's all practice for when they are big boys and they can go back down to Seal Rocks at Phillip Island. And it's really lovely to see. It's all very amicable, it seems to me. I'm sure there's grumpy ones occasionally, but it's quite safe. It's looking lovely.
It is looking lovely.
Yeah. I think the important thing is that people need to know it has to be an organised tour, that you just wouldn't jump in. I don't think that would be wise. You can see that we're well clear of everything, and that they're being guided by the dive masters so that there's no encroachment. So nothing we do, there's no sticking cameras out or your hands out, anything like that. So it's very peaceful.
It is very peaceful, and the entire group of divers have let go of the guide ropes now and just floating quite gently around the colony. And the seals are really putting on a show, and it's pretty gorgeous. I love it when they sort of roll over on the side, Jude, and they give you a little bit of a wink with the top fin there, the top sort of flipper.
They do. They look you dead in the eye. They come up very close, and I'm never sure whether they're looking at a reflection of themselves in our masks or whether they're actually looking deep into your soul. But I feel as if we have a connection at that moment. It may not be as profound for them. But it's really beautiful that an animal will come that close willingly and really have a good look at you. They're very puppy-like. They're very, very canine, I think. I don't underestimate their wildness, however, or what would happen if they did take a bite. But as far as I know, I know that it has never happened with us. And that's, three decades of behaving very gently around them and letting them run the show. It's really nice.
We are going at 10 knots, if we're lucky, in search of a pod of dolphins. You've got to know them really well too over the years. So you were talking about being very familiar with the dolphin colony, and you've been able to see the impact of the more use of the bay on the dolphins. How sustainable do you think this colony is of bottlenose dolphins that we have in Port Phillip Bay, Judy Muir?
They've been remarkably resilient. So to what extent? What will become the straw, I don't know. But I know commercial fishing has stopped in the bay virtually by virtue of a government order, and the idea is to increase recreational fishing. The only problem with that is there's no policing, so it's like having Collins Street or a grid in the city with no... it's lawless. So there's people who somehow get a boat licence. They're not good boat handlers necessarily, but they are out here to enjoy themselves, and quite innocently they will chase dolphins relentlessly, absolutely relentlessly, or they won't see them. So they don't stop, they run over them. And how often that happens and how a dolphin can sustain that, if they've got a calf, they can't dive. That little calf needs to be slipstreamed along with the parent to swim as fast as the pod. That's survival. The slowest must swim as fast as the fastest. And so they slipstream them along. The matriarchs all get together. So we've got grandmothers, we've got sisters, we've got aunts, we've got the mum, all looking after one baby. It's beautiful. I think that collective thing of the matriarchal pod is what's so beautiful and sustaining, really about it. It's that care that's extended all the way through, and it's generational. And we're getting to know those generational links. We've got some photos up there that talk about it, and we've got albums full of photos and stories to share with our people. So we do know them. We do name them. They don't answer to a name, but we know if it's Matilda or Ben Finn or whoever it is, Scone, who's got the tip of his fin gone, and we serve scones on here, so it seemed a fitting name. So there's all sorts of names. I know that my daughter-in-law, the skipper's wife, when pregnant, was acting as our dive master, and she said, I think I'll name this baby after the first dolphins that pay attention, and we had Zorro's Fingers and Matilda. As I've only got sons, and there'd been a lot of boys in the Muirs, I just thought, I'm not keen to have a grandson called Zorro, really. Out of that, we got beautiful Matilda Pearl. Later on, we got her sister, and now a third one. Ben's had a baby. And they are mermaids. They are truly, truly mermaids. They live in the sea. They came out here from the day they were born, wrapped in their dad's sail jackets. They just fit on the boat like you wouldn't believe. And they're quite happy out in the middle of the sea with these huge animals. They look very brave as tiny little tots, but to them, it's just home.
Judy Muir is our guest here on RPP. The Wordy Rapping Hood is the show, and we're on board the Polpero dolphin swim boat that operates out of Sorrento, and one of the last swims for the season with Jude. Jude, you've talked a lot about your observations of the colony, the bottlenose dolphin colony, and the impact and the delight that they bring to people who come out and have one of those incredible experiences that I've enjoyed many times on board this beautiful timber boat when the dolphins do come in and give you the eye. They just turn up and give you the eye. What have the dolphins taught you, do you think, over that three decades of being out on the sea and interacting with them in the way that you do?
One thing is to never believe a smile is a smile. Dolphins have those beautiful corners of their mouths turned up, and they look like they're smiling, and they can look like they're smiling and under all sorts of duress. So perhaps that. No, I think it's that collective, that sense of community, which we know works well in community. We know it works better in families if everyone works together as a team, and their whole survival is dependent on that. They're not lone animals, and so I think that's one of the lovely things. Look, I've learned so much about the sea, and there's so much more to learn, and so just by knowing there's dolphins, and that's, if you're looking at the top of the food chain, then you have to go right back down and look at the benthic population, the tiny little organisms that live in the sand, and then you have to work out how one supports the other. I would love to have people as intrigued by a sea star, and we've got sea dragons, we've got sea urchins. There's so much here. We're population poor, but we are species rich. And what we have here is pretty well the masters of disguise. Unless they're poisonous, they hide. But once people get their eye in, you can share that great love. And I think what I do find is that people go away with a heightened understanding. I mean, we've got them out here for 3 to 4 hours. They can't escape. And so they do get quite a lot of information. I think in a sense that we entertain them greatly, but we also educate them gently. If there's a balance there, I hope that we've got it right. But we do want them to go away understanding that they've been part of something that is so extraordinarily rare, so wonderful, that they will change one behaviour at least. And that might be not to use plastic bags. It might be to make sure you retrieve your fishing tackle and dispose of it properly. It's a myriad of things, you know, packaging and bottled water and just the really simple basic things that people, perhaps on holidays, let down their guard and they're not so careful. But when they let down their guard in a holiday place like this, we're the recipients of their carelessness or their carefreeness. There's no malice in people. I've never found anybody who intentionally ran over a dolphin or did the wrong thing on purpose. And most people, if you approach them without being a maniac, which was my first I guess, way of handling it was thinking, how could you be so stupid to do that? And what sort of idiot are you? That doesn't work. And you've really got, and particularly from a woman, because it becomes very strident and hard to understand, I think, by then. So I think just getting people to understand what you love about it imparts a love. And that might be a recreational boat that's behaving against what is in the best interests of the dolphins, whatever. And people take that very well, fortunately. So I think that's the lovely thing about being out here, is to be able to let people know something more than they knew when they came on board. If they thought it was just a trip out with the dolphins and it was all a given, there's a lot of give and take in this, and we take our bit.
And just finally, Jude, you've lived in this part of the peninsula for over three decades now. What is it about where you live down here in this sort of southern part of the peninsula, and I guess having the bay very much as your home as well? What does this part of the peninsula mean to you?
Oh, it's love. It's absolute love. I feel nurtured. I feel like where I live is right on the national park, on the wild coast, but it overlooks the bay. It's a very old home, not a posh home, just a lovely old place in a very nice area. Simply because it's got that wilderness behind it. We've got wallabies, we've got echidnas, we've got wildlife galore, which is really interesting. And then we've got the flora as well, and we have Moona forests, and it's, to me, all of this is really nice. This morning I just had found and rehabbed a tiny little bird, a little scrubland bird I'd never seen before, and it was a little quail. I didn't think they lived down here, and lo and behold, I found it on the beach, not very well. Now it's off this morning eating seeds out of the long grasses back in the national park, where it belongs, in its exact habitat, where it should be able to survive. Look, it is, I feel like it's my holiday home. I feel like it's my work. I feel like it's my family, my history, and it's my everyday life. But I am never not aware that I should be the most grateful person in the world.
And we did go searching for those dolphins on board the beautiful Polperro with Judy Muir, who's been our guest on this very special Wordy Rapping Hood on this Friday on RPPFM. What a beautiful day out it was. And we had a great encounter with seals on board the Polperro on a beautiful Saturday afternoon on Port Phillip Bay, of course. And we did encounter dolphins, but such is their elusive nature, they chose not to be recorded for RPP on that particular occasion. Thanks to Jude. It was a beautiful day out. Thanks to the Muirs as well. You are on RPPFM. Thanks for your company today. I'll look forward to it again next week on the Wordy Rapping Hood.